chillin', Anna. You will hear about the eliminating of the negative and an accent on a positive.
Gather round me, chillin', if you're willin', and sit tight while I start reviewin' the attitude of doin' right.
Test, test. Is this thing on? Oh, yes, it is. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, The Joyful Frugalista, and now here's your host, Serena Bird and friends.
Hello, Frugalistas, and welcome. So today I have a very special person on the line who I'm speaking to all the way from Texas. Welcome, Sky.
Thank you for having me on.
Sky Alexander is an incredibly prolific author. She's written over 50 books, but especially including on home living. In this podcast, we're specifically going to focus a little bit about decluttering and feng shui. She's written two books, The 10-Minute Declutter, Hundreds of Tips to Organize Every Room of Your House, and 10-Minute Feng Shui, Easy Tips for Every Room. Maybe we might start by asking about feng shui. What is feng shui?
Well, I'm going to give you the Western perspective of feng shui, and as you and I have talked before, you have had experience with the Eastern perspective, having, you know, lived in China and Taiwan, and you know it from the historic perspective. Mm. But over the last 30 or 40 years here in the U.S., we've been adapting those ancient principles so that they work in our culture as well. The way we look at it here is that feng shui is the ancient Chinese art of placement. Mm-hmm. And according to this perspective, your home is a mirror of you, and everything in your home reflects and affects your overall well-being. The placement of furnishings and artwork and colors and fabrics and shapes that you surround yourself with, everything influences you. And the goal is to create balance by intentionally choosing and arranging what's in your environment so that it produces harmony. So feng shui practitioners do this by manipulating what we call qi or ki, depending upon your accent, which is the life energy that animates everything on our planet. It flows through us, it flows through our environment, it flows through plants and animals and everything. And you want to make it move smoothly through your environment, like a gently flowing stream so that it doesn't rush like a mighty river or stagnate like a swamp. You want it to have you want to create a balance of what we call yin, which is the feminine energy, and yang, which is the masculine energy in the universe. And when I say feminine, masculine, I'm not talking about gender. Everything is yin or yang. When you're dealing with feng shui, the color blue, for example, and curves and water and soft sounds are yin, and red, straight lines, fire, and loud noises are yang. And you want to create a balance between these in your environment.
Thank you. Look, I just really love the way in your book, especially the 10-minute feng shui, about how you make this so accessible for a Western audience. As you alluded to, I have come from a background where I've lived in China, and I've lived in Taiwan in particular, which is perhaps a little bit more traditional in terms of Chinese thinking. And my ex-husband's Taiwanese.
Yes.
It was always just this general awareness about where you lived, about whether the feng shui was good and whether the feng shui was bad. And we actually lived in, when we were in Taiwan, in Taipei, in an apartment which had really bad feng shui. Like all visitors would, and it was a very luxurious apartment, but everyone said, oh, this is really bad. There was a sort of T intersection right in front of the apartment block, and one side also overlooked a cemetery. And there were a number of other features. There was cracked glass as a feature within the apartment. There was quite a number of things. It is really interesting because actually, to be honest, in the 3.5 years I lived there, although it was very luxurious, I was never really at peace. I never really had harmony there.
Well, one of the great things about feng shui is that there are lots and lots of ways that you can work with the energy, even in, as you were saying, you know, a place that has bad feng shui or has, you know, really cramped energy, or as we're going to talk about tonight, clutter or obstacles or things like that that are having an adverse influence on your life, because everything that is in your environment does have some sort of impact, and that's what you want to deal with to improve that by using feng shui. Yeah, there are so many different things you can do, and that's partly because symbolism is such a big part of feng shui. And the things that you have in your home, not only just the general floor plan, as you know, you mentioned, but all of the things that are in there have some meaning for you. And you want to find things that have a positive significance so that they represent your intentions and what your goals are. So, okay, can I give you an example?
Please do.
Okay, let's say that you, I know we've been talking about finances, but let's say you want to attract a romantic partner, for example.
That sounds fabulous. I've got a good man, but I know there was a time when I was really looking.
Okay, you need to pay special attention to the area in your home that corresponds to relationships. And in feng shui, we refer to these different areas as gua, G-U-A. And mm-hmm. you're probably familiar with, and maybe some of your listeners are too here, familiar with what we call a bagua, which is an octagonal shape. It's sort of like a map that you lay over the floor plan of your house so that you can see which segments of your house relate to the different areas of your life. Okay, if you are looking to create a better relationship, attract a new partner or whatever, you want to look at the segment of that house or your home that is related to, associated with relationships. And in that segment, you want to include things such as colors or images or things that to you correspond to the ideas of love and affection. So you might use colors such as pink for love and affection, red for passion. You might want to put roses there mm-hmm. because we associate roses with love. All of the things that are in there should support your intention. And you also want to remove all things that don't support your intention or that conflict with it.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. When I, after separation and when I was looking for a new romantic partner, when I first started to have my first serious post-marriage relationship was when I went into my closet and got rid of my wedding dress with love. But I was sort of, every day I was opening, I was just busy and it hadn't occurred to me. And I sort of went, well, if I'm inviting someone into my bedroom and I open the closet and there's a wedding dress there, it's probably not particularly welcoming for a new person anyway. And when I met my lovely husband, Neil, the first thing I did was go through the wardrobe because, you know, I was living in an apartment and I felt like there wasn't really space for him in this apartment. So I went, well, if I want him to be part of my life, I'm going to make space for him.
That's right. And you've described a perfect example of something that would interfere with your intention, what you're trying to create. So you have to get rid of that. That's part of the decluttering thing, getting rid of all those old memories or all those old associations or things that, as you said, would make a new partner uncomfortable, perhaps. You've got to make room for him, her, or for the whole relationship to evolve.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess one of the things with Neil, too, is to explain to him when he was moving in here why this feng shui was important too, because he hasn't come from a Chinese background at all. And, mm-hmm. you know, it seems...
He's Australian, right?
He's Australian, that's right. So he was born not far from where we live here in Canberra, and all his family is sort of Australian, Caucasian Australian of originally an Irish sort of mm-hmm. background. This is quite foreign to him. And after I'd bought this apartment where I now live, I actually got a feng shui expert in here and he told me certain things about where to place things. One day, to surprise me, being the lovely man that my husband Neil is, he decided to hang some paintings up. And I came home from work and he was expecting me to be really happily surprised at his thoughtfulness. And I went, oh my goodness, there's meant to be mountain pictures up on that wall. it must be really difficult to explain to people who haven't sort of grown up in this culture about why these things are important. In this case, it was because I'd been told that the living room was too busy and it wasn't creating a restful space, and that it needed to create a space mm-hmm. where people felt comfortable to sit down and stop. How do you work with your clients to build that trust and awareness of this fairly ancient art?
Well, first of all, I got into feng shui because my initial career before I became a full-time writer, was as an interior designer. I had already had a lot of experience with creating beautiful, comfortable, workable environments for my clients. Mm-hmm. And a lot of interior designers just have a natural ability, natural affinity for feng shui, because we're already doing it. We just don't realize we're doing it, and I didn't consciously know I was doing it. For me, it was an easy move once I discovered feng shui and started studying it and working with it, because I realized I was already doing the things that were important, like creating comfortable floor plans that people could walk through mm-hmm. easily. And that's a good thing, actually, for me to mention to your listeners, that everybody has a sense of what's comfortable and what isn't comfortable. I mean, one of the most obvious things you can experience with feng shui is you walk into a dark, claustrophobic little space, and the first thing you want to do is turn on a light because you don't feel comfortable in that space. That's what we call a feng shui cure. And if you were to walk into a living room, for example, where the first thing you encounter is a sofa with its back to you, you're not going to feel very welcome in that space. So if you just pay attention to your own reactions to the environments in which you find yourself, you will be experiencing the very first glimmers of feng shui knowledge.
I think that's very insightful.
Yeah, when I work with my clients, that's one of the things that I will suggest to them. Just see how you feel when you walk into a place. Go into a place you've never been before and monitor your own reactions to that. And those will tell you a lot about what's good or bad or needs to be improved upon in a particular space. And so that's a good beginning.
Yes, some places just have a vibe, don't they? Like you just walk in and on the surface they're probably fine, but when you're sort of there, like you said, a dark place, it just feels unsafe until you turn on a light. Or some places just have too much heavy furniture in them and just too much stuff, and it feels sort of claustrophobic.
Right.
You just don't feel safe or comfortable there.
Yeah, and what we were talking about with the decluttering part of it is that if you walk into a space that has lots and lots of clutter, and lots of stuff, the chi that we were talking about earlier, the life energy that flows through your home and enlivens it and makes it animated and fun and pleasant and exciting to be there and happy, when there's a lot of junk there, it blocks the flow of that energy, that chi, so that you feel like you're you know, confronting obstacles. Everything's stagnated and it feels uncomfortable. And if that's the case, then you need to start moving some of that stuff out. And that will open up opportunities, new opportunities, to come into your life in whatever area you're seeking.
That kind of makes sense. If you think that if you're in a space that your home, which is usually the space where you rest and recover, regain your energy. And if you're in a home and you're not really happy, you're not sleeping well, it just doesn't gel. That makes sense then,
right?
You're not going to feel really energized and feeling like, oh yes, I've got this next great big idea I'm going to do. You're going to feel a bit depressed and cranky and not sleeping well.
Right. Well, you know, as you were saying before, you had to make you had to make room in your home for your new partner. And here's a good story. I was once doing feng shui for a man who had a lot of relationship and commitment and intimacy issues. Now, every part of his home was beautifully laid out, very clean, neat, nice furnishings, tastefully done, but one area, which was his sunroom.
Mm-hmm.
And his sunroom was cluttered with all kinds of old junk that he had just sort of shoved in there, and he had his recycling and his trash, and even his neighbors put their junk in there. And this was the area.
Why would you let your neighbors put their junk in your house?
It corresponded. Yeah, corresponded to relationships, right? So it was so obvious that he was just loading up obstacles into that area so that the energy couldn't flow through and nothing new could come into his life.
Did the cure work for him? Did he go on to form a happy relationship?
Well, actually, it worked for a while, but what happens to a lot of people, unless they're also going to start dealing with all of the issues that are underlying this clutter building up, it will work for a while, yeah, but they tend to go back to their old patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a complex thing, because when you start shifting stuff around in your house according to feng shui, you will feel changes, and sometimes that doesn't feel real comfortable for people. And that's why I sometimes recommend that people do it very slowly, like take one section, one closet or whatever, and clear that out, or, you know, move a few things around, hang some paintings that are different, but don't go through this really huge process of overhauling everything, because it's going to cause a lot of disruption in your life until you get adjusted to it.
That makes sense. Like, if you've already always grown up around a cluttered environment, so your parents were always sort of a bit cluttered, and then you've grown up into that environment, you've bought your house and you're used to having lots of stuff around you, it's familiar. I guess if you suddenly become minimalist overnight, it's going to feel a bit uncomfortable. It's like, where's all my stuff? You're attached to that.
Yeah. Yeah, because your stuff relates to all of your past, and everything has energy connected to it. That's part of the whole thing that we consider when we look at how we work with chi.
Mm.
Everything has energy, so that anytime you make an adjustment, anytime you get rid of something or you add something to your home, that energy is going to affect the whole.
Mm. That's really fascinating for me, because as we were talking before, I'm on this project this year, Joyful Giving, to give away at least 366 objects in a meaningful way and an intentional way and with love. And it is really interesting to think about that things do actually have a form of energy in themselves. And me just choosing, if I was, for instance, just wanting to get rid of stuff for the sake of it, just to dump them, in a sense, that's a negative energy flow, I guess.
Well, the way you're doing it, I find quite fascinating, because, as you said, you're doing it in a gradual way. It's one thing a day, so it's not like this huge sweep, and you'll be able to adapt to the changes that occur as a result of this. But you're also doing it with intention and with love, and that is the key here, I think, to making creative changes and positive changes in your life that will get rid of the old stuff that you don't need anymore in your life, whether those are physical things or emotional things or past memories or past behaviors and habits. But it also, at the same time, is making space for new things that will open up new horizons for you in the future. I kind of think about that with what you were talking about earlier with the mountain paintings. You know, the mountains were opening up new horizons for you, and greater heights and distant views that would represent the future to you.
You hear that, Neil? I wasn't being totally crazy with the feng shui master telling me to put the paintings there. And I wasn't being critical of you either. There was a reason for it. He did fabulous work hanging the paintings up, but it's good, I guess.
Nothing wrong with the flowers.
He said there's nothing wrong with the flowers that were there before. It's all good. We're all happy. Obviously, a lot of my writing is about finances, particularly personal finances and building abundance.
Yeah.
You have quite a lot of cures in your book about channeling abundance in.
Yes, because that's a big issue for a lot of people.
It is. I mean, we've just seen in Australia the devastating effect of the bushfires. With us here in Canberra, thankfully, we were okay, although my in-laws' home was threatened. They had to move and stay with their daughter for some time, came within 2 kilometres of their home. Southern Canberra was affected. Many places in the south coast, which is kind of like where we go on holidays, about 2 hours from here, were severely affected, and that's affected all of tourism in the area and everywhere else. I think abundance is very much on people's mind right now as they recover from these things.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And feng shui can help a great deal in that way. First of all, if you go back to what we were talking about earlier with the bagua, in Western, in the most, I would say, common or popular form of Western feng shui, what we do is we align ourselves and we align the bagua with the front entrance to our homes. And we then are going to identify where the wealth, what we call the wealth gua, or the wealth segment of our homes is. So if you're standing at the door to your home, the entrance to your home, or in some schools of thought, the entrance that you use most often. It may not be the front door. anyway, you have, you're back to that, and you're looking into your space, your interior space, and the wealth section, the wealth gua is the far left-hand corner, far left-hand segment of your home.
Right.
What you want to do is, first of all, get rid of all the clutter there, because that's going to block the flow of new stuff coming into your life. If you've got all this old stuff there, you don't have any room for new stuff to come in.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And a lot of people shove stuff into closets, which can also create a problem, because when you've got all the stuff blocked in your closets, once again, it's jammed up. There's no room for that energy to flow, be fluid, and bring new into your life. Also, in terms of if you want to attract abundance, you have to think of things that relate to abundance. Now, we look at things here in this country, gold, for example, the color of gold, the color of green, which represents growth, and in our culture here in the U.S. represents money. In China, black is a color that is associated with wealth, and red also is associated with good luck. So you want to put colors in that area that represent what you're trying to accomplish, what you're trying to attract. Anything that has powerful meaning to you related to financial prosperity, abundance, plants, for example, beautiful artwork, anything that has meaning to you related to that intention, you want to put that in there. And anything that's broken or old or worn out or damaged or, you know, doesn't have a positive significance for you, you want to get rid of that, because the symbolism is going to be detrimental to your intention.
That's actually really fascinating for me, because in my apartment, that room was the room where all the stuff went when I first moved into this place. And so it was filled with boxes. I had like an old desk, and I had all these broken stuff that I couldn't work out what to do with. And I actually had some money troubles, really unexpected and random money troubles when I moved into this apartment. I had to buy a new washing machine. I backed into a car. My account got hacked. There was a whole range of really unforeseen things. And I was getting quite stressed about money. And one of the first things I did was actually clean that room out, and I rented it out. And I must say, once I cleaned that room out, my money problems just all disappeared. They just went from no problem to like just money just came in. And I never actually really thought of that in terms of feng shui terms.
Yeah, well, it is definitely connected to your subconscious as well, and your feelings about things and your attitudes and what symbolism matters to you, because your symbolism may be somewhat different than mine. But we have to be, if we're using feng shui, we have to be aware of all of those things and how they are contributing to our overall concerns and our overall goals. One of the other things that you and I had communicated about was the kitchen.
Yes.
And how do you incorporate things in your kitchen into producing financial gain?
That's something, right? I'm really interested in, someone who loves cooking. And I didn't realize until I read your book how significant the kitchen is in terms of prosperity and abundance.
Yeah, it is, because when you think about it, this is where you are nurturing yourself. You're nurturing your family, or you're nurturing your friends, or whomever you're feeding. You're feeding yourself, and you're caring for yourself. And so that's the symbolism behind it. And one of the easiest ways to attract wealth is to turn on your stove. I mean, I'm not a big fan of cooking, but you don't have to be Julia Child. You don't have to be a gourmet cook. You just have to turn on your stove every day. Maybe just boil some water, make some tea, or heat up something. Every day, that shows your intention to enliven yourself, to feed yourself, to nurture yourself, and to attract prosperity. Because in feng shui, the stove stimulates financial gain, or at least that's the symbolism behind it. You also want to make sure that your stove is clean and in good working order. And another thing you can do is hang a mirror, particularly one that is an octagonal-shaped mirror, above the stove, because what the mirror does is reflects and essentially doubles the positive energy that's generated by the stovetop. Heat, fire, all kinds of things that are connected with that, like fireplaces and candles, etc., are activating symbols in feng shui. So that's part of the reason that the stove and fire in general will help to stimulate and generate financial gain.
That's really fascinating because I've never made that connection. And I guess real estate agents often talk about the smell of home cooking, vanilla scent in the house, how that really helps to draw buyers in and create that kind of atmosphere. But I had never really thought about it in terms of your ongoing prosperity and the symbolism that that shows for people who live in that house.
Mm-hmm. And you want to keep in your mind also while you're cooking, good thoughts, prosperous thoughts, abundance thoughts, loving thoughts, because whatever you are doing, whatever you're thinking while you're cooking is going into that food that you're later going to ingest.
As someone who loves cooking, that I think I just love that. And I must say, I don't always think good thoughts when I'm cooking. Sometimes I'm a bit frazzled and worried about getting things on the table in time. But that is so important. And I guess my sister and I, we've noticed this as well. Like when you're cooking, sometimes it's late at night. If you're making something for the next day, when it's not sort of cooked with love, you do feel that. It's just the end result isn't the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Skye, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you today. I'd actually like to finish with a quote from your book because I felt that this was, it was towards the start of the book and I thought it just summed it up just so lovely, so nicely about what you're about.
I'm glad.
And so you write, the most important part of feng shui, however, is your intention. When you put a cure in place, you demonstrate a willingness to take charge of your life and to change something that you don't like about it. And I just thought that was just so powerful.
Absolutely. And I think that feng shui gives us really easy to use tools that we can do that.
I think so. I think symbolism, like you said, is very important. When you look at things subconsciously, it makes you focus or reminds you about certain things. Thank you so much, Skye, for being here on the Joyful Frugalista podcast. It's been such a pleasure talking to you with you.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been wonderful talking with you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
For my listeners here today, how can they contact you and find out more about your books?
Yeah, well, people can contact me through my website. That's probably the easiest way, and it's just www.skyealexander.com. And I always respond to all of my emails, and I would be happy to hear from any of your listeners who have questions or want to share ideas with me. That would be great.
Thank you. That's very generous of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Joyful Frugalista with Serena Bird. She actually likes everybody. And of course, sound has been by Neil Hadley. And myself, I'm Joseph McGrail Baitup, the record holder for the Guinness World Records.
Gotta accentuate the positive eliminate the negative latch on to the affirmative don't matter.